Our guest on this installment of Folk Image is Annie Rapid. Her new release, out earlier in 1998, is entitled Roses and Ash. Welcome to Folk Image, Annie.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and of course we tape our programs here in Massachusetts, and you're on a tour of, a very brief tour of New England, just for a day or two right now?
Well, no, I'm actually... I'm going to be in this whole sort of New York, New England area for a month. I'll be here for, a couple of days this time. I'm going back more towards New York, and then I'll be back all next week as well, and in Boston.
Okay, now this is your first album release as a musical artist?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, you were born to parents that traveled all over the world. They were...
During the diplomatic service.
Has that affected your perspective as a writer, as opposed to maybe someone who was born and raised in one place?
Yeah, I think it has, in that because I grew up in that world, and so the desire to travel was kind of implanted in my brain at a very young age. So subsequently, once I graduated from college, I ended up sort of going to Europe. Primarily Europe, very often, and living over there, and I went to graduate school there as well. So, and actually, off of this particular CD, there's quite a few songs about travel, and it's a theme that definitely comes up in more than one of the songs. So, it has definitely affected my writing.
Yes, that's one reason why I asked the question, especially Spain and Iberia.
Right.
Must have made a real impression on you, because that obviously is a
It definitely did at one point in my life. Mm-hmm. I traveled there quite a bit.
Now, as you were growing up, you also developed aspirations to be an architect, and you've gone quite far in that area, in fact. How did that desire take seed in you?
Well, you know, it was really, to be perfectly honest, the sort of thing where I started undergraduate school, and I had an undeclared major and took a few courses in the College of Environmental Design at the school I was going to, and I was decided that was what I wanted to do. So I started the architecture training by my second year, and it really kind of started when I was in college, although I'd always sort of had an eye for architecture growing up. I didn't, like, for example, when I was 15, think I want to, you know, become an architect when I get older. I really didn't know what I wanted to do till I got to college.
Mm-hmm. Now, musical performing, when did you start doing that?
Well, I had played the guitar and had even written a few songs when I was a teenager, and continued to play the guitar up in, you know, first couple years of college, but then I completely put it down and didn't play the guitar for years, and went off and sort of really did the whole architecture thing. And then really in a very short span of time, I realized that if I had done what I really wanted to do, I probably would have been a musician, and I decided to just go for it, and I made that decision, and that just started a whole nother phase of my life.
From your biographical information, it seems like you had pursued architecture to the point where you were making a living at it for a while?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
How many years were you doing that exclusively?
I did it up until I was around 28 years old. So, you know, you figure whatever, graduate from college at 21. So 21, 22. I mean, I didn't really get out of graduate school till I was 25. So probably I worked in the field for about 4 years. But I continued to support myself doing freelance architectural work for a while when I was still doing music, and then I dropped it because it just...
No time.
I couldn't balance doing both things, because you have to really show up and, you know, do the architecture. It's not like slinging a hamburger. And it was believe me, I've slung hamburgers too, so I know what that's all about. But I just realized that I had to focus on the music, and for the last 3 or 4 years I've supported myself solely doing music anyway, so...
That Spain theme comes up again, because you did some studying at the University of Madrid for your master's degree in that, so you spent some time there, undoubtedly. The first cut on the album we're going to hear now is called Yeah. It's I think it's rather different than the emphasis of the rest of the album.
Yeah,
maybe a little more dare I say the word, commercial type of track. Explain the origins of this song.
Well, it's a dulcimer song. It's written on the dulcimer, so it's the instrumentation is a little bit different than the rest of the album. It's dulcimer and electric guitar finger-picking parts. But it was really a song I wrote around the time of turning 30 and feeling like I'd sort of made it through my 20s. And so it's sort of a celebration in that sense.
We'll give it a listen. It's called Yeah from Annie Rapid's album Roses and Ash here on Folk Image.
All I really want to do is find some kind of circumstance in which I can invest in myself. Yeah, I left my home and family in the name of this discovery whose power has evaded me until now.
That is simply entitled, Yeah, from Annie Rapid here on Folk Image, our guest in the studio as we record this program. And, well, it's nice that you are here today and made it through the sweltering heat as we record this program, as sweltering as it gets here in this part of the country.
It's a lot cooler than it was in New York City. It was really hot there.
Right.
Talk about sweltering.
Concrete and asphalt. But... well, you set upon to embark on a musical career. After all of this travel and all of your studies for architecture, you based yourself for a while in L.A., I guess, right? Once you started your music career, or did you go to New York?
Well, I went to New York initially. That was where I ever first performed, and I moved there. I had grown up in Los Angeles, and I felt that I needed to go somewhere where nobody knew me because I sort of wanted to start over again And so I moved to New York, and I spent 5 years there. And then I moved back out to Los Angeles, where I've lived for the last 3 years, because I started to do a lot of West Coast touring of colleges and universities, and it just made sense to relocate. And I felt I had sort of come to the end of my New York journey, so to speak. So I'm living out in Los Angeles now, and as it goes, I'm probably gone about 60 to 70% of the time now anyway, so I'm just sort of on the road a lot.
Is that just sort of how your career developed? You started successfully getting booked for these colleges on the West Coast, whereas nothing on the East Coast materialized for you?
Well, in part that's true. I felt that I needed to leave the East Coast and go back out West, because I just thought it would, more things would open up for me out there. And that I believe that that is sort of what happened. I mean, who knows what would have happened if I'd remained on the East Coast. But ironically, though, now I'm getting pulled back to the East Coast a lot. So now I'm living on the West Coast, and I have a lot kind of going on the East Coast. It just felt like it was time to go back out to Los Angeles, and I do a lot in Oregon and Washington and California, and so a lot of touring.
The years you were in New York, we got into a big discussion off microphone about this, and I'm going to try to pull some of it back onto the microphone here. But your years in New York, what would you say about being in the entertainment industry or the arts in general in New York? Is it what it's cracked out to be? Is it paradise? Can anyone establish themselves there who really has the talent? Or is it just one little world, and it's usually not enough to build a career?
I would tend to go with the latter, although there certainly are exceptions to every rule, and there are people who do break out of the New York scene and get discovered, quote unquote. But I think New York is really a great place to go to get started and to sort of build up your chops, and it really... I think if nothing else, it's so brutally difficult to live there that your dedication to what you're doing within yourself becomes so strong. And that's definitely, you know, there's some real reality to that. I mean, I know there were times where if I hadn't been really into what I was doing, I would have quit, because, you know, most people, you go through a lot of poverty there being an artist in a way that you wouldn't in other places, because it takes so much more money to live in New York, and you live badly for so much there, whereas you can live in so many other parts of the country on the same amount of money and live much better. So, I think it's a great place to go and just sort of... initially immerse yourself in that world. I mean, I had a great time on the local New York City music scene. I met wonderful people, and people who I think will probably be friends for life. But I also knew at the end of 5 years that for me, the time had come for me to leave, and that if I wanted to go to another level in my career, I needed to get out of there. And I did, and that is what happened. I went to another level, and I don't know that I would have if I'd stayed in New York.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems to come in cycles, too, as far as music people who base themselves out of New York becoming successful.
Right.
There was a period in the 80s where you had Suzanne Vega and a whole host of other people. Even, John Corker, you can really sort of count him as coming out of the New York scene, even though he's, you know, lives in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of big names started coming out of New York that were sort of tutored, I guess the word is, by Jack Hardy, and people that he knew that started to make it, even though he remained obscure today. There seemed to have been in the 80s, but in the past several years, a corresponding surge of people based out of New York making it, you know, acoustic-based music people.
Right.
Seems they're not there.
Yeah. There was a lot going on over the last couple of years in New York, a lot of people getting signed, but it was not the acoustic scene. It was more alternative, more of the alternative rock scene. I mean, I know that when I was living there, there were two scenes. There was the scene in the West Village, which was more the Jack Hardy, Fast Folk crowd, and then there was the East Village scene, which was the anti-folk scene, which actually was the scene that I was on. That was all the people that I met. Those were the people I ended up recording my CD with. And the one person who came out of that was Beck, who obviously is an incredibly famous musician at this point. But it was funny because when I knew him on that thing and would see him at all the local clubs, he was doing a real Woody Guthrie thing. And now he obviously does a much more alternative, you know, a very eclectic mixed bag of a lot of stuff, but obviously he's become very, very successful. But no one else has really kind of come out of that. But it is, it's very cyclical. I mean, you know, it could be a completely different thing a year from now. Who knows, you know?
Yeah. I think of another name, Lucy Kaplansky, too. But but Lucy's doing very well, and she's very popular among the folk crowd, but she has not managed to cross over as a pop act or anything like that.
Well,
but, you know.
It's hard to cross over. I mean, I know that what I've gathered since I've released this CD, that the folk world is really a world that's very specific and unto itself. And if you want to be in that world, that's great, and you can definitely have a career and you know, as a musician. But if you want to cross over into some kind of a bigger venue, you're going to have to leave that world and kind of go somewhere else with it.
Okay. We're going to play another track here from the album, and you can tell us about it. Yes, track 4, which is The Promise, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Certainly one of the standouts on the album, I would say. It's a beautiful song. Just describe the creative process that brought it into being.
It's kind of one of the more dour songs on the album, but it's really a song about, actually what kind of inspired it was, I was reading a book on these ancient Celtic, what would you even call it, divining stones called the ruins, and one of the stones, how it was describing what the stone stood for was, it said, when in deep waters become a diver. And I thought that was really a kind of a neat metaphor, so sort of built around that. And this song is about sort of living in a house of silences and what that can do in the long run, but how you can turn adversities into strengths. And that's really what the song is about.
We'll give a listen right now. It's called The Promise, from Annie Rappet, our live studio guest here on Folk Image.
All these things I never said to you. I learned to dive for things I could be deep in. All these things you never said, you know, they just got stuck inside your heart like voices in your head, and all these things you never said to me. And all these things I never said, they just got stuck inside my heart and stuck inside my head. And all these things I never said to you.
Promise. Annie Rapid from her album Roses in Ash, and she is our studio guest on this installment of Folk Image. So, being based in L.A. as you are now, do you get a chance when you're home to perform at various clubs there? What kind of an acoustic scene can we expect there these days?
Well, there is definitely one that's going on. I personally haven't been much a part of it recently because I've really been on the road for the last year. I probably, if I sat down and really tallied it up, I've been out of LA 70% of the time. I'm just really never there. So it's been hard for me to tap into it because, to be perfectly honest, too, when I am home and I've been on the road, I prefer not to go out to clubs. I just kind of want to chill out and be at home. There definitely is an acoustic scene. I don't think it's the most fascinating or interesting thing going on in the country right now, but as we were just saying, as we were just discussing while that song was playing, things do go in cycles, and it could change in a year from now. But I certainly have done my share of performing in L.A., and when the first couple of years that I moved back there, I ran this series of shows called Women on Top that featured local LA female musicians. That was kind of fun to do for a couple of years, but then the road just kind of pulled me away from having the time to do it.
Right. And the road always creates a different type of life altogether. Uh-huh. it's an incarnation in itself, it seems, sometimes, if you have to travel. You've gotten some recognition in the acoustic scene for your work recently. I guess there was a showcase at the New Music Seminar a while back.
Right.
In Long Island, and you were a finalist for one of their showcases. Tell us about some of the things you've been recognized for as a performer, some of the events you've attended, awards you've won, whatever.
Well, I still lived in New York. I played at the New Music Seminar, which I guess the name of that has changed to the New York Music Festival, which is actually going on this week in New York City, which is kind of a big industry hoopla thing. I did enter the Long Island Music Festival for a couple years in a row. I played 2 years in a row, and the second year that I played, I was one of the finalists. Unfortunately, I had to come out to California, and I couldn't go to the actual final, so who knows what would have happened if I had. But, I guess about a year and a half ago, 11 Records, which is a division of Geffen Records, it's a label that's run and owned by Doc McGee, who manages a lot of bands like Kiss and people who are not at all in the folk world, nominated me for an award for Best Unsigned Artist about a year and a half ago.
That's a nice recognition to get.
Yeah, that was nice.
That's certainly in line there. Okay, we'll examine another track on the album right now. We're speaking with Annie Rapid here on Folk Image. Her album is called Roses and Ash. It's on her own Dirge Records. What made you come up with the idea for the label name?
Oh, that was such a disaster. I had actually come up with a completely different name and had done not a thorough enough name search. And as we were doing the artwork, the guy who was doing my artwork called me up and goes, "Do you realize that there is already a label that exists under this name?" So it was like I had all of about 3 seconds before things were going to the printer to come up with a new name. And that's what I came up with. It was just kind of, well, okay, here it is. Boom. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually kind of like dirges, but, you know, I probably should be taking St. John's wort more often, but, you know, but that's the way I am. But it kind of appeals to me. And this particular track is entitled Roses and Ash, right? We're going to hear the title song.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Tell us how this came into being.
Well, this was a song I'd wanted to write for a long time. It's there's kind of a great book out there called Resurrecting Ophelia, which asks a pretty important question, which is why so many young girls around the age of 12 or 13 begin to lose their self-esteem. And I think that is definitely something that does happen, and it was just something that I had wanted to write a song about, so I kind of pulled a lot of recollections of my own childhood being that age and sort of that transitional period in your life.
Yes, it very effectively communicates it, as you'll hear the song right now, Roses and Ash from Annie Rabbit on Folk Image.
Remember that 12-year-old summer floating on public water.
Roses and Ash, the title track from Annie Rapid's new CD, fairly new, released earlier this year. And she is my in-studio guest here on this installment of Folk Image at www.folkimage.com. So how much of the year are you actually on the road, and how much of the year are you living as a normal person, so to speak, in Los Angeles?
Well, this year it's been about 70% on the road, and I've been home about 30%. But I don't think I'm going to tour this fall because I really need a break. So I think I'm going to take off about 4 months and not tour, because I also really want to start recording another album. It's written and ready to go, and so I'm, in fact, as I was driving today, I was kind of like, okay, you know, let's get it together and get into the studio when I get back and start the recording process, because it'll take a while it takes a while to record an album, so mm-hmm. I'd like to start it this fall.
The songs that are going to appear on the next album, were they all written since this album was released, or has it all come to you rather quickly, or just songs that didn't fit, really?
Well, some of them I wrote a long time ago, and some of them I've written since this, it's about 50-50, some mm-hmm. of them I've written since this album was released, and some of them I wrote way back when, and they could have been on this album, but they weren't, you know, that sort of a thing, so... I think, like with most people, I mean, I've got, you know, I could go in and record about 3 or 4 albums, but of material that I have, but I wouldn't necessarily want to record everything I've written, you know?
Right.
So it's just that process.
Being a more computer literate type of recording artist, you have quite a presence. You know, you have more of a presence on the web than a lot of independently produced and artists.
You mean my actual website?
Yeah, you have an actual website.
I cannot take personal responsibility for that. I'm not computer literate enough to have pulled that up. I had somebody do all that for me.
Yes,
and I have someone who actually maintains it for me, because I don't have the time.
You just don't have the time, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. And there's also audio clips of your music on there.
Right.
It was a fairly complex website to put together.
Right. It took a long time, and there were definitely some problems, and we have a whole cyber cache thing set up where you can purchase the CD over the over the net.
With encryption, you can
right.
Yeah, you can use your credit card and buy it right over the net.
Right.
And that's available at annierapid.com, right?
Right.
And mm-hmm. they should if they haven't seen the link here, it will be coming shortly on our playlist pages. But since we've been playing, you know, quite a bit of your material, it's appeared here.
I actually wish I had more time to you know, get into the whole linking my website to this and that to drive more traffic to it, but it's just been one of those things where I've had so much to do over the last year that just kind of fell through the cracks, and maybe I can, like,
right.
get it together and put some more time into it in the future.
It's been the case with this particular website as well. It's been like a dog chasing
mm-hmm.
tail. We're two impoverished individuals trying to put on a website ourselves, and it's a very slow process. If you have money, you can make things happen fast.
Right.
If you don't, you can't, and it all feeds upon itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had the money and the time, you'd be doing the publicity work that would ensure you a large audience, and when you have a large audience, it gets to the point where you can actually sell banner advertising. You know?
Right.
So, I'm glad that you have the presence on the web that you've had, and we've emailed each other back and forth here and there. And,
right, yeah. The web's been pretty invaluable for me anyways, just in terms of communicating with people and DJs, and it's been really terrific. A real asset. I'm very glad I got into all of that.
One of the big problems with this kind of music is distribution.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a major headache for people in the folk music industry who run record labels. And
I mean, the record labels trying to actually
get distribution in retail world.
Right.
Have you seen, or do you think that computers may eventually, the computer world will eventually solve that problem?
Where people just buy over the web?
Where people just buy over the web.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, I have a distributor, and Big Easy out of New Orleans, and, you know, we've gone through the whole distribution thing, and it takes a long time to, like, build it up. Like, I just recently got my quote-unquote BINC number through Borders, which is obviously just one chain, but that was, I still have no clue how that came about because they are not easy to get. But so it's a really long process. So yes, you would kind of hope that the web would maybe take over that. I, to be perfectly honest, have not sold a million CDs over the web. But again, this could be just because I haven't personally, I think, put the time and energy I probably need to drive more attention into my website. It's just, you know, it's marketing, and you got to kind of put a little bit of energy into it, and I just simply haven't had the time. But, yeah, it's very possible that it could, you know, all lead into that. I mean, I was just at a seminar in Nashville last week where and I participated in a festival that was run by Media Play, which is obviously a huge music chain that within that is Sam Goody and a bunch of others. And they had some people there talking, saying that, you know, we might not be here in 10 years from now because of the web. So who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
That's interesting for them to admit that.
Yeah, they were saying that, you know. So
with all the problems involved with retail distribution, you know, they almost dig their own grave.
You know, Prince sold his last CD over the web. He didn't even put it into stores, so who knows, which I heard wasn't terribly successful for him. I think the web and doing this is still at the very beginning baby stages. So
still infancy here.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet, but it could. Who knows what's going
to
happen.
Large parts of the American public are just not used to buying their music over the internet with a credit card. It takes a while for them to adjust to that.
And some people are scared to do it. I've actually, in fact, we just recently in the last couple of weeks made an adjustment on my website which said, if you don't want to do this, you can write to this address and send a check, and the CD will be mailed out to you. Because I got some emails from people going, I don't want to put my credit card over the web. So even though it's completely safe, because there's all this stuff that you have to do, I mean, it was all this technical stuff, believe me, it is completely safe, people are still a little bit wary of that.
And usually your browsers, well, the two most popular browsers, Internet Explorer and Netscape, have those little icons that indicate that if you're in a secured area for a transaction, that little lock or that little key will, you know, icon will go on. So once that goes on, then all the encryption programs are in place.
Right.
And tampering is next to
impossible.
Oh, believe
me, I pay every month to have that. It's an extra charge.
Yes, I guess that's in the music business or any kind of distribution business. I guess that's inevitable. You think you're saving money on distribution because everything's electronic. But there's that extra charge of maintaining the website that you may have had to put into distribution channels anyway. Who knows? It probably all comes out even in the wash. Let's get on to another track from the album. We're going to do track number 3, which is called Like a Hurricane, and describe the creative process of this song.
Well, I wrote this song really fast. I mean, this was one song that I probably wrote in about a half an hour, which for me anyways is extremely fast because it normally takes me much longer to write a song. It's really probably the most pop-oriented song on the CD. And that's about it. It's kind of my turn at more of a pop-type song than a more folk rock, maybe I should say.
Okay, we'll give it a listen. Annie Rapid with Like a Hurricane from her album Roses and Ash here on Folk Image.
Thank you.
That's Annie Rapid here on Folk Image with a track from her album Roses and Ash. And that one is called Like a Hurricane. And, well, you're talking about another album coming out. So far, does it look like it's going to be on Dirge Records, your own label, once again?
As of now, yes. Who knows what will happen over the next year. I've been really pleased with kind of what happened with the CD and the amount of airplay it's gotten, and just, kind of the support I've gotten from retailers and just a lot of people. So it's just, this business is like a snowball, and you just keep building your snowball, and you just keep sort of doing it, and I feel like I've had, a nice kind of little success with this thus far, so hopefully it'll just kind of keep going. But my take on it is that I just want to keep, I'm not going to wait around for people to do things for me, and so I just want to keep doing what I need to do, and hopefully someone will come in and give me some of the financial backing and whatnot, just so that, and do some of the business work for me so that I can stop doing all of it, because it's a tremendous amount of time drain.
Yes, yeah. It's very hard to do both.
Mm-hmm.
Since the album has come out in January, I guess the mm-hmm. release date was, and, we've got 7 months have passed by now. I know that one of the reasons you've relocated to L.A. was because of your performance schedule seemed more geographically centered mm-hmm. over there. Has the release of the album caused your performance schedule to again geographically shift a little bit just by the way of having a national release?
Yeah, I actually, the album has gotten kind of airplay all over the country, like in some places I never would have, in Texas and in Tennessee and in Kentucky, it's actually gotten quite a bit of airplay, and even on some top 40 radio in places like Kentucky, it's like, okay. Mm. Yeah, and it's gotten a lot of airplay in on the East Coast. So put it this way: since January, I was out in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, all like the month of April, and so it's definitely kind of pulling me sort of all over the United States now, and a lot back towards the East Coast, because it has it's done pretty well out there. So
yeah, when you release an album, it's like rolling the dice. It's like mm-hmm. a crapshoot. You never know where it's going to pick up airplay, and mm-hmm. you develop all these little pockets of notoriety.
Well, that's why actually normally I wouldn't tour in July. I never tour in the summer, but I sort of was getting a lot of airplay in places like Boston and in Vermont, and I kind of felt I needed to, because of that, come back to this whole area and do a bunch of in-stores, and I'm doing quite a bit of live radio for stations that have kind of really supported the CD. So
I'm fascinated by what you said, that there are pockets of even top 40 stations that mm-hmm. have done it, and smaller stations in Kentucky and places like that.
Right.
It makes me glad that there still is, or still are, radio stations that are not owned by big corporations, where one bureaucrat decides the playlists for all the stations
right.
in the chain. And one big danger we're facing in this country now is more and more central control of media.
Right, right.
It's a very big danger, folks, if you don't know it now. It's a huge danger. It's one step away from 1984, 20 years later.
Right,
20
it's
years
true.
Too late. Or 10 years, 15 years too late, whatever it is. But it's nice to know that there are still these maverick stations that decide to play an artist like you, even though you wouldn't think their format emphasis mm-hmm. would allow them to do mm-hmm. so. But they find something that fits, and find something that matches their community and their audience, and
right.
And you can still have these nice little surprises.
Yeah, but I'll tell you that across the board, top 40s, well, it's just incredibly hard to crack into. And how that really came about was a radio promoter out in L.A. who promotes a lot of kind of big top 40 acts had got a hold of my CD and really, really liked it and wanted to help me out and support me. So it was really through her efforts of taking a personal interest, and she did what she could. And, you know, some stations were open to it, but a lot of them are just like, we won't even go near this if it's not a huge hit already. Just there's kind of that that attitude kind of right out the gate. So it's not an easy market to break into.
Yes,
and it's not really, you know, it's not really where I'm coming from anyway. So that's okay with me. You know, it's not, I'm not doing top 40 music, so.
That attitude is part of their culture, mm-hmm. their particular mm-hmm. format culture, unfortunately, but that's the way it is. Time for one final song before we bid you adieu and get you on your way. I guess you're going to, as we record this, you're going to be playing at a Borders.
Yeah, I'm going to do some Borders around this area.
They've got you booked in a number of their stores, right?
Yeah, I'm doing quite a few Borders, but I'm also on this tour, but I'm also tying in. I've done several Tower Records, and I did a Virgin Megastore yesterday, so it's kind of more than, and Sam Goody, so it's more than just Borders on this particular tour, which has been fun to kind of mix it up a little bit.
We're going to have to reprise a bit of our New York City discussion for the final song we're going to be playing here, New York song. Tell us about this one.
Well, this is actually a song that was inspired by a friend of mine who was a singer-songwriter that I knew while I was living in New York, and he was from a very small town in northern Florida, and I guess at one point he had tried to move back there, and it was sort of a disaster, and he found himself back in New York within about a year, and he used to tell me just these hilarious stories about trying to re-immerse himself in the sort of more small-town culture that he came from, and it really kind of just comes out of that, like the whole odyssey of leaving the small town and going to New York.
Annie, thanks for joining us here on Folk Image.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck with all your efforts
thanks
in the months ahead.
Okay.
Annie Rappett, our guest here on Folk Image at www.folkimage.com. And this is New York Song from her album Roses in Ash.
Lived 5 years in New York City, in a one-room flat down in Chelsea. Today I find myself traveling down these interstate highways. I guess I'm homeward bound. Big city baby, passed through Baltimore, Maryland, and Washington, D.C. I pass through greater distances now mapped inside of me. Of all these broken landscapes and slums I've lived in, and as the miles they quickly gather, memories to the wind they scatter, oh, fade into tomorrow. And I keep all my dirty little secrets hidden, stuffed inside evasive, missing all the letters. Oh, my written note, bless your sons and daughters. Bus pulls into the Greyhound station. Mom and Dad anxiously awaiting. I remember Jesus loves me as I see church steeples rising. New York fades into the black and leather clothes that I am wearing. Oh, watch me disappearing. Streets are clean here, but they're empty. Friends change, most have gotten married. Circumstances move along according to the plan. Stuck inside forever, what we choose to do and can. God bless America. We keep all our dirty little secrets hidden, stuffed inside our narrowness and organized religions. Oh, and all that Jesus loves you. one last cigarette. Snub it out along with all regret about what I could or should have or would have been. I'd have died if I had tried living up to you and it all that expectation. Don't think of New York all that often, except when I catch my spirit drifting high above these rooftops and this restlessness in here. It's in as I'm going back in springtime of next year.